This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born in great opportunity.
The next generation of sports radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey.
Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Here's Tony Desiri.
We are rolling along in hour number two here on SB Nation Radio. Jenna Thomas will join us in 30 minutes from SB Nation, the Falcoholic. What a great name, by the way. The Falcoholic. Covers the Atlanta Falcons. We'll talk to her about this team, how good they are. They are explosive. Offensively, 48 points against the Carolina Panthers, who fall to 1-3. I'm not ready to jump on the Panthers bandwagon train just yet. I mean, I know 1-3 is a tough hole to get out of, but look, they lost to the Denver Broncos on the road. They lost to a Minnesota Vikings team that's loaded. They lost on the road to an explosive offense like Atlanta that is better than we thought. I don't think it's the end of the world in Carolina. There are some 1-3 teams that I had high expectations for that are really, really letting me down. The Arizona Cardinals are one of them. Tampa Bay is another one. They looked totally mismatched against the Denver Broncos, who are making it look easy against everybody, but it was relatively easy for Denver in that game against Tampa Bay. By the way, no more late afternoon games in Tampa. No more. Stop with these thunderstorms, these lightning storms. That's what it's like down there in the fall. Get these games done early, wrap them up. Stop playing late afternoon games where you're getting lightning. Lightning scares me to death. I'm not afraid of heights. I'm not afraid of spiders. I'm not afraid of like a lot of things. Lightning, for whatever reason, is if the Falcons again, and I said this earlier today, every time I check the news and notes of a team every week, I see Julio Jones is dealing with knee issue, hamstring, calf strain, limited in practice, and yet all of it's a ruse because he plays great. On Sundays he plays, and he plays good. 300 yards is really an amazing eye-opening stat. What I loved about the Falcons against the Panthers was that it's textbook that when a team gets a lead, they like to sit on the lead, they like to try to milk the clock. The Panthers came back in that game and made it an 8-point game. And the Atlanta Falcons on 1st and 10 do this slant to Julio Jones. He takes it 75 yards and breaks the game open again. So the Atlanta Falcons at 3-1, Carolina 1-3. But as I said, they played some good teams in the first 4 weeks of the season. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. All right, we live in our business, we live in the hot take business. Right, we live in a world where you got to have the hottest take. You got to take something and maybe twist the angle up it a little bit. And a lot of people in our industry do it really well. But sometimes we get a little carried away. And you'll see this occasionally when somebody will say, "I've got 5 reasons why Tom Brady isn't even in my top 10 quarterbacks of all time." And you go, "Okay, it's a stretch." But what they're trying to do is try to be really different. So I made the point a couple of weeks ago. Let's say about a week and a half ago, that I wasn't all in on this Bill Belichick can take anybody and make them a successful quarterback routine. Because Belichick runs a system, you fit a system, but outside of that, we've seen very mediocre play, if not below average play, from quarterbacks who have left the New England tent. Ryan Mallett didn't turn into anything, Matt Castle didn't turn into anything, Brian Hoyer had a pretty good game, but he's a journeyman quarterback. So we don't see an influx of Tom Brady backups that come into the league and tear up the league because they learned something under Belichick. Their time in New England was really good. They developed better than anybody across the league. What we see Bill Belichick do is he wins with guys who are making their first career start because he keeps it within the realm of what they do. He finds out what they do really well, what they're really comfortable with, and then devises a scheme around that. And then defensively, they play really well, but they don't get crazy and they don't ask a ton. They have a really good team. The Patriots, look, have been a lot more than just Tom Brady's arm. They've had really good defenses. They've had really good running games. It's a really well-coached team top to bottom. He's got really good, smart assistants. So when called on, for guys to make their first career start, the New England Patriots have a system in place that allows that person to be really comfortable and thus success. You saw it with Jacoby Brissett in his first start, Jimmy Garoppolo with his, right? The list goes on of people who have started for Bill Belichick and have won their first game. But none of them turn into stars. None of them do. The crux of their quarterback play has been the fact that Tom Brady never takes snaps off. He hardly ever sits. He's hardly ever hurt. He hardly ever sits, even in mop-up action. So it wasn't surprising to me that Jacoby Brissett didn't have a very good game against Buffalo. I wasn't really expecting him to. But I was surprised that the Patriots didn't win the game. Brissett was 17 of 27, 205. No touchdowns, no interceptions. He was sacked three times. He didn't have an awful game that cost him, but he didn't move the offense. The running game was pretty much stalled. No real huge offensive threat. Right? Turnovers were the kind of the day for the New England Patriots, and the Buffalo Bills got some good solid play from Tyrod Taylor, and LeSean McCoy ran the ball pretty well. I was surprised that the Patriots were shut out, but always remember this too. When the Buffalo Bills are looking at the Houston Texan game, they're trying to devise a game plan. They now have information on Jacoby Brissett. So this narrative that Bill Belichick, right, can just turn a winner into anybody has never been proven out. I mean, Matt Castle won a season, but they didn't make the playoffs. And then Matt Castle, he's bounced around enough times to give you a headache. The other quarterbacks that I've mentioned who have come out of the New England Patriots system have all been journeymen. Get a job where you have a job. No, Tom Brady plays a lot. He's not broken down. He's not a guy that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger will break down for three or four games a year. Tom Brady doesn't do that. He starts all the time. He has started 13 seasons. In 13 seasons, he started all 16 games of his career. But again, I was surprised they were shut out, but I wasn't surprised Jacoby Brissett struggled. Now, what did we get from the New England Patriots almost from the start of the Jimmy Garoppolo era, the first kind of 2.5 games that he played before Brissett kind of did take over? Game and a half, if you will. Is that it's Bill Belichick is a smart guy. He's going to look at his roster. He's going to look at the future. He's got to determine who his quarterback's going to be, not 2 years from now, three, but four, but five, but six, but seven. Brady is going to be 40 soon. He's got to start turning the page. And if there was one coach that's not sentimental, that's not nostalgic, that doesn't live in the past, that doesn't care if you want to have that one final season at 42 years old, it's Belichick. To him, it's a bottom line business. But what you're seeing today in New England was the reaction that it should have been all along. Can't wait till Brady comes back. Because you lose 16-0 to Buffalo, it reminds people that, yeah, you have one of the greatest quarterbacks that have ever lived. Now, I know for New England fans, they're not forgetting that. But for everybody else who thought the narrative was, it's Belichick, 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 he'll take anybody and make him a star, he'll take anybody and win, not true. Not true. We live in a world of the hottest take, and the hottest take about the Patriots was, boy, that coach is so brilliant, he could take me off the street and I'd win games. Well, no, not really, if there's tape of you available and they can dissect a game plan. Because that's exactly what the Buffalo Bills did. Sure, Rex Ryan is playing for his job. I get it. But now the Bills are 2-2. Now, you beat New England once in Foxborough. I don't care how you do it. That's worthy of a celebration. You shut out New England in Foxborough, you get bragging rights for the week. You can say whatever you want and do whatever you want for the week. So Rex Ryan gets a pass. He can be goofy, silly, say anything he wants. His team went out there and did that. But I think the Patriots, going forward, I'd never like the angle of, well, look out now, you've rattled the cage. I'm not a big guy on that because I just don't think teams just flip a switch and they win whatever they want. But you get this feeling with the Patriots now, with Brady coming back, that there's going to be a little extra kick in what they do going forward. They know everybody was rooting against them. They know everybody is joyful that they got this suspension. I don't know. It could be something really special in Foxborough. Sometimes this is the thing that just needs to kickstart you. Coming up, we'll talk more from the NFL, college football, and the United States crazy weekend. SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio. SB Nation is powered by Berryman B12 Chemtool. The good stuff.
Dalton back to throw. Steps up. Heaves it long. A.J. Green is wide open. AJ. He's got it. Touchdown. Yeah. Bengals.
Yeah. Hey, it's A.J. Green at Cincinnati Bengals. You listen to SB Nation Radio.
Ah.
the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
Seeing a report that the Carolina Panthers are unsure if Cam Newton will play against the Buccaneers this week. Yeah, well, Cam Newton, just stop taking hits, please. All right? So you see Deion Jones coming. Don't gallop into the end zone standing up. These guys are going to take their hits. Cam Newton, I tell you right now, when you have that kind of size as a quarterback, it's got to be hard to think like somebody, you know, like kind of a quarterback that's not his size, obviously, like a little smaller. Because you're Cam Newton and you're big, you probably think, yeah, no, this is how I play. This is how I go. And you're going to get popped. We saw this against Denver. Guys want to take pops at Cam Newton. They do. He wants to run outside the pocket. He wants to run like a running back. You get out there, you're going to get hit. Deion Jones clobbered him. He was out of the game, and in came Derek Anderson. Trevor Siemian left the Bronco game with a shoulder injury. In came Paxton Lynch. You know, when I first saw that, my thought was, you know, I've seen this play out before. You know, you get a kind of a rookie quarterback at your draft, and you keep wondering when you're going to play him. You kind of hold him off a little bit, but then, boom, here comes the inevitable injury to the starting quarterback. But I think if I'm the Denver Broncos, I would play Trevor Siemian at 85% over Paxton Lynch. Keep this thing rocking and rolling. They cruise through the Buccaneers. That defense is so good. And it's proving me wrong again. I feel terrible going up against the John Elway machine of logic. But it's time and time again, it's been proven that the Broncos don't need stellar quarterback play. They need good quarterback play. They don't need it to be great. They're not going to go whipping around downfield for 5 touchdowns a game like they did in 2013 because the defense is fantastic. And they just shut down the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers look like they didn't have any answers. They didn't have any answers as they're now 1-3. Pittsburgh Steeler game on Sunday night was fun, although I expected a little better result from Kansas City. I didn't think the Steelers would be that explosive against Kansas City. Now, here's the thing. I really have nothing to go against, you know, on that. But the opening game, it was pouring. I don't like games in the rain because you never know where the ball is going to bounce. You don't know how slippery it's going to be. You don't know how different teams play in it. It was pouring rain. Roethlisberger threw 5 touchdowns. Kansas City was getting, finally, the Steelers had a pass rush. And Alex Smith was getting hurried. So they rolled in their game. The Ryder Cup, I wanted to get this in because we're going to talk a little bit more golf tomorrow about how this exactly happened. Because when the United States lost the Ryder Cup 4 years ago, Phil Mickelson was very vocal about Tom Watson and how the team was put together and what's wrong with their approach to winning this. Now, the Ryder Cup is this biannual event against Europe. It's a big deal in the golf world. The United States has been losing, 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 losing. This weekend, it all seemed to come together, and they finally now have some sort of plan to go beat Europe. Now, it'll be different 2 years from now when the matches are in France, because the European crowd will be rowdy, and it'll be their turf, and they'll be able to set up the golf course the way they want it. But while it was at Hazeltine, it was set up the way the United States wanted it, which was make it easy, let's get some scoring, and let's make it, you know, fun and exciting. And they did. You saw stats on Sunday, like Phil Mickelson made 10 birdies, and there were 19 birdies between Rory McIlroy and Patrick Reed. Crazy numbers like that. And the reason was because the course was set up relatively easy. There wasn't any real challenge. All the pin placements were away from water. So the United States wanted let's get some birdies out here. Let's get some scoring. Let's make it exciting. Let's get the crowd into it. The crowd was the biggest concern at the Ryder Cup because it gets very vocal. It's a different kind of crowd. It's a different kind of thing than players are used to. Rory McIlroy, for example, had a guy removed because he was really over the top. It can get really rowdy. It can get very partisan, and it can get raucous, and it can get rather insulting. And that's part of the Ryder Cup lore. Now, Mickelson and this team, I thought that they were going to win this Ryder Cup from the beginning. Because I thought, look, you're bringing in young players like Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler. And these young guys are kind of, they're separate from the, oh, woe is us, we're never going to beat the Europeans. It sort of dominated the early 2000s in this event. And I thought Patrick Reed is an absolute necessity on a team like this. A guy that wants to play combative golf. And that's what he did. So that was really, really fun to watch. The thing about it was after Patrick Reed had won, and after Mickelson had won, I kind of lost interest and really just ended up focusing on the football for the rest of the afternoon. I didn't even watch the ceremony. I didn't even watch the spraying of the champagne or any of that kind of stuff. I flipped it back when Ryan Moore had the putt to have the hole to win it outright. Then it was a rather subdued celebration, and then I was back to what was going on in the NFL, including watching the Broncos kind of dismantle the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But that being said, it was a really, really cool weekend. Because, again, the college games, I thought, were really, really sort of, they made an impression. Here's what I mean by that. The Tennessee-Georgia game, for example. When I saw Butch Jones fall to the ground in just disbelief that his team was able to come back and win that game on a Hail Mary, I thought, you know what? The tide is turning in Knoxville for the Volunteers. A team that had gotten pretty much excused for not being able to close out games until they got to this year where everything was on the line in talent. To go on the road and win that game in Athens the way they did it, you feel like there's something brewing in Knoxville. And not all is lost for Georgia. Because with Georgia, they now have a quarterback in Jacob Eason, who thought they had the win when he scored with about 10 seconds left to go. I thought Michigan and Wisconsin, I thought that game went about the way I thought it was going to go. I thought it was going to be a low-scoring, sort of more trench-oriented type of game. It did. I loved the way Louisville came back in their game against Clemson. That cannot be overstated. Lamar Jackson didn't lose any Heisman vote with me. Yes, Clemson went out to an early lead, 28-10, but the Cardinals came back, and then you saw Clemson react, getting fed from their fans. Their defense is very strong. And now we're starting to see that the ACC kind of play out a little bit. So we got a really good weekend of stuff. Really good weekend of stuff. But I think today, and we're going to be talking to Jenna Thomas, is the turnaround of the Atlanta Falcons. I wondered if they were good at 3-1 or at 2-1. And now I really know that they're good offensively at 3-1. Julio Jones, Matt Ryan, Kyle Shanahan is their offensive coordinator, and they beat a Carolina Panthers team. And I was saying this earlier at the top of the hour. The Panthers have lost to the Broncos, the Vikings, and now the Atlanta Falcons. And all three of those teams could be off to the playoffs. We know two will be. I'm going to put Atlanta in there, but I don't know if a season collapse is in order. But I know the Broncos and the Vikings will be. I don't think that's something to be worried about the Carolina Panthers, but they definitely look different. The Panthers definitely look different. There are 1-3 teams that are in trouble. I don't put Carolina on that list. I put the New York Jets on that list. I put the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on that list. I do not put the Carolina Panthers. I think the Arizona Cardinals are on that list too, but I don't put the Carolina Panthers there. That's a very talented team. Tweak a couple of things. Keep going at it. You'll get enough victories. You'll make a run towards a playoff berth. I think the Jets are in real trouble because their quarterback throws too many interceptions. I don't know what's going on with Arizona. I think they're problematic, and I think Tampa Bay is not as good as everybody thought that they were going to be in the first year under Dick Cutter. But to dismantle that defense like the Atlanta Falcons did was impressive to me because Kyle Shanahan worked with this offense last year, and they didn't do anything. And they couldn't do anything. And now Matt Ryan spreads the ball around. They have a running game. Alex Mack as center has been better than advertised. And they took apart, yes, Josh Norman is no longer with the Panthers, but that's still a top defense. And they took it apart. Apart. So we'll find out exactly how they did that coming up next. Jenna Thomas from SB Nation, from the Falcoholic. Good sight. That's next. I'm Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
The next generation of sports radio.
The handoff by Hornies to George in a foot race, and he gets away. George is gone. Eddie George putting up more Heisman Trophy numbers.
This is Eddie George, former football player, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation Radio. This is the Tony D Show.
All right, thanks for joining us. The Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. They just ripped apart the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. They have the hottest offense in the NFL. And Gina Thomas joins us from SB Nation, the Falcoholic, to cover the Atlanta Falcons. He'll explain how they're doing this. How are you, Jenna?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Good. I want to ask you about this right off the bat in terms of Kyle Shanahan. Is he doing anything different? Is his approach different in 2016 than it was last year?
You know, I don't think that his approach is necessarily different. I think that what we're seeing is that this offense is more comfortable with each other and within the scheme. And I think that the success on the field is a result of that.
Gina, when you look at Matt Ryan, is he playing differently? Is his approach different? And again, we talk about the scheme, but now is the quarterback different?
You know, I think that the biggest difference for Matt Ryan is really the stability in the center of the line. And Ryan has had really inconsistent offensive line play over the past few seasons, really going back to 2013. And last year, the center position was a real problem. They had Mike Person in there, who was a converted guard, didn't have experience at the position, particularly in this zone blocking scheme, which is fairly complex. And so bringing in Alex Mack, an all-pro caliber center who has experience in this specific scheme after being with Kyle Shanahan in Cleveland, and just is playing on a completely different level. He brings so much stability to that line. So what you see about Ryan is just the confidence that he's playing with. He trusts his line, and he's able to step up in the pocket and make throws, or when he has to extend plays, he knows that he can do so without worrying about taking hits and losing yards and potentially losing the ball. And so I think that the biggest difference for Ryan is the confidence that comes from not just more time acclimating to the scheme, but also just the security that he feels behind this line with Alex Mack at center.
So Julio Jones has 300 yards receiving, and I'm like, whoa, okay, those are big numbers. If you play fantasy, they really stick out. But I said earlier, I feel like every news and note that I've gotten throughout the season from the Falcons is, hey, Julio Jones is dealing with this bump and bruise. He's dealing with this bump and bruise, and he's limited in practice Thursday, and he won't practice on Wednesday. Is this all true, or is he dealing with some nagging injuries like everybody else, or is there something wrong and he's overcoming it, thus making 300 yards even more impressive?
You know, I think that he was really more dinged than he was willing to let on. And, you know, one thing to know about Julio is that he is truly a competitor. He loves the game. He loves to compete. He's a guy who can get one catch for 16 yards against the Saints and still be thrilled because he knows that he did his job to help the team win. And so he's going to get out there. If he's at all physically able to play, even if he's not 100%, he's going to do it. But I think that this week he actually was 100%. This was a week that he really didn't miss much time, wasn't really limited much in practice, and he told us on Thursday that he is fully healthy. And so I think that part of the reason he was able to have such an explosive day is because he was fully healthy.
Gina Thomas joins us, SB Nation, the Falcoholic, talking Atlanta Falcons. They have the hottest offense in the NFL at 3-1 on the season. All right, so take me back. So when they got rid of Mike Smith, and here comes Dan Quinn, a Falcons team that had gone to the NFC title game after their 2012 season, and then had some years where they finished 6-10 and kind of some losing records. What did Dan Quinn inherit? What was he trying to rebuild there?
You know, I think that really the issue has been that they have focused so much on building the offense. So you had Roddy White, who for years was a really great, really reliable receiver. Obviously, Tony Gonzalez was here for a while. He left before Quinn got here. But they didn't really replace him with somebody who could replace his production. Julio, they gave up a lot to get him, and he's been worth it. He's just a phenomenal player. But they've really focused on the offense and really kind of let the defense fall by the wayside. So for many years, they weren't able to get pressure on quarterbacks. They were, you know, kind of middling to poor against the run. They did get Desmond Trufant, who's a very good young cornerback, and then spent a second-round pick in that same draft on Robert Alford. So they did try to address the secondary, but really, you know, the front seven in particular was much weaker. And so that's what Dan Quinn was coming in to deal with in Atlanta. And as a defensive-minded coach, I think that he's place the real emphasis on getting the guys that he needs to effectively execute his defensive scheme. So you're looking at guys who are really athletic and really fast. And we see that, for example, in Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, who hasn't been able to play for the past 3 weeks because of an ankle injury, but I know the team's eager to get him back on the field. And then in Keanu Neal, the team's first-round pick this season of the strong safety, And so those guys are really upgrades over the people that they're replacing in the starting lineup. And you really see the difference in terms of that speed, especially.
So this Falcons offense, and again, for those who just haven't been paying attention to what the Falcons doing, just sort of seeing box scores, and then seeing this one and saying, oh, there's Julio Jones and Matt Ryan doing it. This is a pretty diverse offense. There's a lot of guys who have caught touchdown passes. How spread out is the wealth of offensive talent that they have?
It's honestly incredible, and it's something that I've talked to the players about here over the past couple of weeks because it really stands out as a big step forward for this offense. You know, Matt Ryan, I would say my biggest criticism of him over the years has been his tendency to lock in on his first read or maybe his second read if you're lucky and kind of stick with that. But he's really able to progress through his reads much more efficiently now. He's taken a huge step forward in that way. And even though Julio had such a huge day yesterday, and I mean, it was remarkable, Ryan still hit a total of 9 receivers yesterday. So you have the 2 running backs, Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman, who are very reliable receivers out of the backfield. Jacob Tammy has been really impressive. He's got great chemistry with Ryan this year. And Austin Hooper was the team's 3rd-round pick out of Stanford, the tight end. He's looking like he's been a great addition. He had his first touchdown yesterday, and he was ridiculously wide open. And then Mohamed Sanu, the team got him in free agency, and he's been a great addition. And they brought in a couple of guys as free agents, Aldrick Robinson, who's got really game-changing speed, and also Taylor Gabriel, who they picked up off waivers from Cleveland when teams made roster cuts after the preseason. And Gabriel had some experience in Shanahan's scheme as well, and I think had over 600 yards when Shanahan was in Cleveland, so obviously a good fit for the scheme. And he's got incredible speed. So they've really been able to use those guys to stretch the field and to keep defenses honest. So I think that's probably the biggest factor for this offense right now is that they have so many playmakers.
How's the running game? Because that has also been evident that Atlanta is not just a passing offense. They're also top 5 in running, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they were less productive on the ground yesterday because Carolina is still really stout up front. They've got a really good front 7. But the threat of the running game is something that helps open up the passing game. Teams know that they have to account for what Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman can do on the ground, and it changes the way that they're able to cover all of those receivers. So that's been a huge factor, and obviously, you know, the running backs had a tremendous game against the Saints, and the Saints don't have a very good defense, and that is a factor. But just knowing what those two are capable of changes the way that teams have to game plan for them.
Defensively, I know we talk a lot about the offense. Defensively, what needs to improve for the Falcons?
I would say we're still seeing them give up a lot of yards, a lot of explosive plays. The missed tackles have kind of been a factor throughout the season. And I've just mentioned, you know, they've got a number of young players starting. And I think that that's something that comes more with experience. It's something that the team will continue to work on. But I would say that, you know, giving up those explosive plays is still probably the biggest concern. The other factor is, and it's something that we're seeing incremental improvement, is the pass rush. And yesterday, something that they did really well was pressure Cam Newton, which is not an easy thing to do. They didn't do as well pressuring Derek Anderson when he came in after Cam was concussed. But we are seeing them take, you know, incremental steps forward in terms of getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So that's encouraging, but it's still an area that needs improvement.
Gina Thomas, SB Nation, the Falcoholic on the Atlanta Falcons, again at 3-1, coming off that win over the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. Great talking with you. Thank you so much for your insight on the Falcons. Hope to catch up with you soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Gina Thomas, again, SB Nation, the Falcoholic on the 3-1 Atlanta Falcons. So again, touching them on, this isn't just Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. It's a lot of weapons around them. A lot of guys get touches. A lot of guys get catches. A lot of guys get touchdown catches on this offense. Yeah, defensively, they could be a little bit better, but, you know, this has been probably a 3-1 surprise. We did our 32 days of previews, 32 shows of previews. Everybody comes on that we get from the local markets to help us break down a team for the season. Most are optimistic. We've had a couple where they're like, this team stinks. They're lucky to win 4 games. But everybody is a little optimistic. And when we talked about the Atlanta Falcons, there really didn't seem a lot there based on what we saw in 2015. Boy, that's all out the window right now. No, it's early, but right now they are the surprise 3-1 team in the NFL, at least for me. All right, coming up, we'll talk more on the National Football League. I am Tony D. It is SB Nation Radio, 800-777-2907. Some interesting moves in college as well.
This is SB Nation Radio.
Hand off Elliott, right up the middle, cuts to the right, to the goal line. Zeke Elliott's first NFL touchdown.
The next generation of sports radio.
This is Jerry Jones, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
SB Nation is powered by Berryman B12 Chem Tool, the good stuff.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, this segment brought to you by Wrangler, real comfortable jeans. Tony D with you on SB Nation Radio. Good job, Joe George, the first day producing this program.
Oh, thanks,
well
Tony.
Done. Nice piece on Vin Scully that we had in hour number one.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I enjoyed it. That was supposed to be the first one I made. I made one last week, two last week, for Arnold Palmer and Jose Fernandez, and I didn't like making those, so... These are the fun ones to make.
Yeah, very good.
And I'm looking forward to doing one for, like, you know, when the Cubs win the World Series. You know, things
yes,
like
when
that.
The Cubs win the World Series
I
as
hope.
We head into the Major League Baseball playoffs now. I really hope so, too.
Oh, me too.
I really do.
Well, I get to go to a game if they get to the
okay,
World
now
Series.
Give us the details on this. What game would you be going to if they go?
I'll be going to Game 3 of the World Series in Wrigley
okay,
Field.
Okay, good. So you're going to Game 3 at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, so because my father and I have season tickets, so I can't use them because I'm in Houston, Texas, but... we have season tickets, so we get first access to playoff tickets. And I was looking at flights, and it was $44 both ways to Chicago and back to Houston. And I was like,
how do you get flights? Oh, I want to fly to Florida for vacation. And my wife is like, this is going to cost $10 million for our family to fly.
Well, you go to like, I use Southwest all the time. And then there's like a calendar option where you can look at all their flights. So if you don't have to go like for a specific days, you can kind of, it'll show you when the cheapest flights are. So and it just happened to work out that. When they released the World Series schedule, that the tickets were still super cheap to get to Chicago, so I booked them right away.
Let me tell you, it's going to be great. It is. If they win the World Series, it's going to be better than you can ever imagine. When the Red Sox won in 2004, it was everything we all thought it was going to be times 1,000, and with people, it was just insane how the city lost its mind and went crazy.
Oh, I couldn't
it's
even
gonna
imagine.
It's going to be great. You can't imagine. It's going to be so fantastic if they do this. But you know what? Let me ask you this. If they don't, you got a young team. That's the team that should be in contention. Will it be, all right, well, we're kind of used to disappointment, but this shouldn't be like, hey, we're not getting back for another 5 years. Should be back at it again the next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Winning 100 games.
Yeah, I have no concerns as a fan of the team. And you look at the roster from top to bottom. I mean, their only real question right now is Jake Arrieta. And
yeah, he's not been pitching very well.
And I think they should trade him personally because he's going to get paid way too much money, and he's really old. And I think it's just they should just move on after the season. They should trade him for a younger pitcher. But you know what? Besides that, they're in great shape. They got so much talent. They've got too much talent.
Absolutely.
Kyle Schwarber's not even on the team right now.
I get it. If you lose, you'll be a scapegoat. You'll be looking for somebody to blame. The tattoo guy is definitely somebody to blame.
Yeah, all his fault.
That tattoo guy, I can't believe he's flirting with fate like that. I can't believe somebody is that stupid to flirt with fate like that. You don't anger the baseball gods.
Especially
don't mess around with that.
Especially the Cubs. Like, they've done it enough. You don't want to add to that. You don't need to add to that.
Let me tell you a little quick story, and I got to go back a ways. 1986 World Series between the Mets and the Red Sox. And Vin Scully was doing that game with Joe Garagiola. Game 6, the Red Sox are up by a couple of runs, and they have two outs, and the Shea Stadium sign posts, "Congratulations, Boston Red Sox 1986 World Champs." We all knew that was trouble, right? So the Mets come roaring back. Now, the Mets roar back, Ray Knight scores, the Mets win game 6, they have this incredible come-from-behind moment when the ball goes through Buckner's legs and all that, the wild pitch by Bob Stanley, all of the problems of that game. But the Red Sox still had game 7, and so you sit back and go, okay, but you can regroup. The next game was supposed to be Sunday night, okay, and Oil Can Boyd was supposed to pitch for the Red Sox, and he couldn't, and it rained out, the game got rained out, it got moved to Monday. Here was the problem, nobody in New England thought that the Red Sox were going to win Game 7. They just knew it was a matter of time. After game six, you're like, That's it. We tempted something. We messed with something. And now the baseball gods are bestowing their anger on us. So can you imagine carrying on the inevitability that you're going to lose the World Series for two whole days? No, like as soon as Ray Knight crossed the plate, you're like, that's it. Series is over. And you're like, no, the series is not over. There's another game. No. Trust me, it's over. And for two whole days, they had to sit back and go, yeah, this one's not going to be
awful.
Done. That's it's like a terrible feeling.
That's like how Bartman was.
Exactly. That's the kind of feeling, right, that hovers over you when you live under a sports curse. It's not, oh, don't worry about it. We're going to get him the next night. It's, nah, it's done. Nah, this is something I should never have seen in my lifetime. What, blow a two-run lead with two outs and nobody on? Huh, why wouldn't I believe we'd come through that? The same with Bartman, right? Bartman messes with Moises Alou. Yeah. Like, yeah, of course we're going to lose this game. Why wouldn't we lose this game? That's it right there. We messed with the baseball gods and we're going to get burned. Something's going to happen. And sure enough, it did.
At least the benefit of this Cubs team is they're basically all the same age as me. They're all like, we're all like 25 and younger.
You're all young, right?
So at least like they don't have that much feeling of the curse. Like that's
what you might need. I brought this up with the Ryder Cup. There was a woe is me aspect to the United States Ryder Cup. Phil Mickelson was like, we're never going to win this thing. And Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed and these young kids are like, what are you talking about? Why couldn't we beat Europe? Why wouldn't we beat Europe? No, they don't understand. They have our number, man. They just beat us every time. They're more together, and they just beat us up every time. And they're like, no, we'll just go out there and play our heart outs and kill them. And that's what they did. So, yeah, you might have that with this Cubs, like Chris Bryant and those guys going, what do you mean? Forget this. Why wouldn't we win this?
And they don't have to play the Cardinals. Games.
And they don't have to play the Cardinals. There's no Cardinals. Watch out for the San Francisco Giants.
No, yeah, but like the Cardinals, I mean, it's just like – even
though the Cardinals
they're the inferior baseball team of all the teams that made the playoffs, and obviously they didn't make it, but that's the one team any Cubs fan or any Cubs player does not want to see.
Yeah, and you don't want Joe Buck going, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Not at all.
In my most unbiased way possible, announcing a Cardinals game on national television.
He hates the Cubs.
Oh, he does. He does.
Yeah, he really hates the Cubs.
Again, so thick you could pour it on pancakes, man. So thick you can pour it on pancakes. Prime Cuts coming up next. Our thanks to Joe George producing the show today. Our also thanks to Gina Thomas from SB Nation talking Atlanta Falcons and Howard Balzer from the Sports Exchange talking NFL. I also want to give a thanks to Adam Sager, who's been my producer since January of 2015, is moving on. I really miss you. Really loved working with you. Good luck to Adam. He'll be on occasionally, but thank you, Joe, for stepping in and doing a great job on day one. All right, Prime Cut next, SB Nation Radio.